Welcome to the CFO Show. I'm your host, Melissa Howitson, CFO of Vena. Businesses are facing constantly evolving ESG and sustainability mandates all over the world. And CFOs play a key role in ensuring their organizations are up to speed on what is happening and how it will impact your business. Today, we aim to remove some of the complexity by taking a step back to understand how we got here, the current state of ESG, where it's heading, and what it means to our companies. This is part one of our two-part series on ESG and sustainability. In part one, we will be focusing on sustainability regulations in the UK and around the globe. Joining me for this discussion is Mark Lumsden Taylor. Mark is a partner and head of sustainability at MHA, the UK member firm Baker Tilly International, where he guides UK business leaders through the process of integrating environmental, social, and governance considerations into their operations. Mark specializes in the rural business, agriculture, horticulture, food manufacture, education, and healthcare industries, as well as supporting organizations from a wide range of sectors to develop and deliver impactful sustainability and ESG strategies. Mark, welcome to the show. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
So you have been working in the area of ESG for quite a while and lots of experience. Can you tell us a bit more about Baker Tilly and your role there and your experience with ESG?
Yeah, so my history goes back actually all the way down to 2004-05 when I took a break out of practice. I'm actually in what was a McIntyre Hudson, is now MHA Baker Tilly, lifer, trained at the firm, and then decided to go out and do a lot of work in agri-food and build a big educational institution. I felt giving back to the world rather than just staying in the corporate world, just something about my DNA. And we were fortunate enough after a very large recovery job on this particular business to be invited to be part of Prince Charles's Accounting for Sustainability program. And he was looking at nearly 20 years ago, the importance of disclosing the impact of business on the environment. And it was called the Accounting for Sustainability Disclosures Project. Us, a couple of large corporates, including Marks & Spencer, we were part of a team that built those disclosure structures for voluntary disclosure, obviously long before it became a thing. So I've been involved pretty much all of my career. And then when I returned to the firm in 18, one of my main tasks was to drive the sustainability agenda. And I guess the difference between what we do and what others do is that we are enshrined in the principles of what sustainability stands for, not necessarily just about compliance with the reporting frameworks. So Baker Tilly I'm very proud of that. And that's kind of part of our DNA. So Baker Tilly is the ninth largest global accountancy firm in the world, circa in 650 offices, 150 countries. And MHA is the UK member firm for Baker Tilly International. And we're about 2,000 staff and about 110 partners, I think. And I'm one of those partner leads. And I head up sustainability, environmental, social governance. And I'm also the sector lead for aspects of food, working with my colleague on agriculture, who is the overarching sector lead. And everybody needs to eat. So it's almost logical that that sits within the range for environmental social governance. So yeah, that's me. And I would say, yeah, I'm an MH lifer or a Baker Tilly International lifer.
It's interesting to hear that journey all the way back to that early beginning. I guess we could say we have you and that work that was done to thank for where things are today. Now, and the UK has been really leading the pack, I would say, when it comes to ESG and disclosures and frameworks. Can you talk a bit about what you've seen as that journey the last couple of years?
It's an interesting one because the UK was the first country in the world to enshrine a form of disclosures into law, statutory reporting. And they enshrined it into the listing rules in 2019, which I think it was ultimately acted in 2021, for companies in the who have a premium listing in the stock exchanges to disclose on the principles of sustainability, which governance, risk, metrics, and strategy under 11 effectively reporting subsets. And no one else had adopted it in that way. And then we let that roll. And then we adopted some further legislation UK climate and financial disclosures for companies that weren't listed, but were over £500 million turnover and 500 staff. And there was something specific around the alternative investment market, which was a subset of task force climate-related disclosures. And then we stopped. And then in parallel to that, Europe gained huge traction, started developing its corporate sustainability reporting directives. And obviously, the UK had departed from the European Union at this point. And the disclosures for companies in the UK have kind of paused. So you've got the big disclosures, which I've just referred to, and then this huge gap right the way down to some really small level disclosures about reporting emissions and what you're doing to and improve and enhance the climate, which is known as energy savings opportunity schemes and sustainability and environmental reporting, SECR and ESOS as they're known for short. But they're a long way away from the reporting that larger companies do. And you have this enormous gap now. And we've kind of gone, we haven't gone backwards, but we haven't moved at the same pace as perhaps Europe has. And that's one of the big challenges for the United Kingdom. And we spend quite a lot of time working with regulators and on policy groups as a firm, talking about, well, how do we now bridge that gap? Because there's a big debate, isn't there, around how much reporting is done versus actually doing the right thing that businesses should be actually doing around sustainability. And you notice I use the word sustainability rather than environmental social governance. We're a firm believer that sustainability is the overarching frame at which all of these other aspects sit, whether it's net zero, accounting for emissions, or indeed environmental social governance, which was is a reporting tool. So the UK is in a interesting position at the minute.
And so you've touched on Europe and how they started moving this way. What about the overarching landscape in some of the other major areas? I'm thinking of, you know, the US, India, for instance. What are you seeing there?
I'd say when all of this started happening and people started talking about, well, who are the big emitters? What should they be doing? We know that South Africa, China, India are huge emitters, right? And everyone was talking about pollution and the environment. And I know the US, obviously, as well, but proportionally. Europe, I think, collectively only accounts for, I think, 15 or 16% of global emissions. Collectively, Europe, EC, or European Union. But why do we do it in Europe? Because if we weren't demonstrating the highest possible standards we could, and I'll come on to what that means in a moment, do you think the rest of the world would be doing it? The answer probably would be, not sure, maybe not. Reason why, so the European Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive is a highly complex and very, very, very detailed directive. And it's woken up a lot of businesses. And I'm actually a fan of the CSRD. Some probably people may turn around and go, Mark, you're mad. Why am I a fan of it? It's because it absolutely challenges the very fabric and integrity of what you are trying to achieve. Because there's no way to escape it in terms of the questions that auditors should be asking. Now, the people that are actually doing the work, accountancy firms like ours and others, have to have certain sets of qualifications. ISQM1, in other words, the ethics and the principles of delivery. You can't just have a set of consultants doing it. They have to have the credibility in the market. And that, in turn, I think, then supports those businesses that when you're signing off with absolute clarity. So Europe's really gone to town, and it's overlaid by EU taxonomy, which for people who might not understand what I'm talking about, is basically the overarching principles of reporting ethically and transparently and with absolute rigor. And if you're not actually telling the truth, you shouldn't be reporting. And when reporting first came into being, I think everybody was learning, including the accountancy world. And how many businesses now made those commitments in 2019 and 2020? Yeah, we're going to be abolishing plastics by 2024 and we're a plastic manufacturer. How many companies do you think are rolling back on those commitments now and actually redefining it? And at that time, should the auditors have been more robust in the way in which they did things? Absolutely. And one of the principles around what we do as MHA is everything we do is enshrined under the regulations. And we're very tough. So we will challenge businesses very, very, very robustly about what they are saying, whether it's green lighting, green wishing, green washing, or even rainbow washing, because people talk about emissions all the time. But what about the societal aspect of that? So Europe has really led the way. But underpinning that, though, you've seen a surge, which is good. So take India, for example. Because as much as implementing regulations and rules, who's policing it? And then who's policing the police? In India, they've adopted some really robust legislation. So they enshrined a lot of rules under the Companies Act back in 1949. And then they enshrined some reporting rules, very similar to what the UK did under the SEBA, which is the Securities Exchange Board in India, which was extended to, the top 500 companies in India by scale. And now they're moving that to the top 1,000 largest companies listed or otherwise in India. So they're really widening the scope of what they're trying to achieve in terms of reporting. And a lot of that mirrors or reflects what's going on in Europe in terms of reporting emissions, talking about supply chain impacts, how that's recorded and reported. And I think they're looking at punitive fines as well in India as well. But the challenge will be, well, how robustly is that policed? So as an organization, we deal with a lot of companies that have got operations in India that might be listed in Europe on stock exchanges or in Ireland or in the UK stock exchanges. So they still have to effectively comply with UK legislation as well. And how the, to use that phrase, interoperability of legislation actually works. What's pleasing is at least these countries are now taking it seriously or more seriously. Challenge will be, well, how robust is it? And then obviously you have the US with the Securities Exchange Commission. This year, they finally adopted some, best way of describing it, baseline regulation around how companies should be reporting their emissions. But they only went as far as, I think, scope one and scope two. And again, those companies, and they're only doing it for the SEC, obviously, the listed entities, and how much disclosure is going to be audited and how robust that disclosure is, because the wording is extremely general. When you read the legislation, does it hold those companies to account? Question mark. If I could wipe the slate clean and say, okay, what would I like to see? My view would be you would take the European legislation and you would cascade it into the UK and a phased approach in the USA and start with all of those effectively developed countries and then work with the subcontinents about adopting a phased approach to that and building on what they've already achieved. That would be the perfect standard for the world. I could do a TED talk on that. will it happen? Possibly not by terms of the regulator, but will it happen by stealth? Possibly. Possibly. And that's what we're saying to businesses and say, look, you're going to have to adopt this, Nate, that they've used a particular fundamental, which is different to everything else, the phrase double materiality, which is the inside out proposition. And what that does is it takes financial materiality, which is the impact of the world, the climate on the business, which is pretty much what we've always adopted. Mm-hmm. And now they've created impact materiality, which is, well, what is the impact of the business on the environment? That's the fundamental difference, right? And that could be around environmental, societal, and governmental issues. And that's what double materiality is now pulling out. And it is actually a really robust concept and quite a brave concept for Europe to do, but it's actually making companies really think now. So if you build a factory and you build it badly and the foundations aren't built correctly and it causes significant erosion and you're near floodplains or you're near an area of landscape that is prone to erosion or extreme weather, and that building that factory causes significant impact on that environment, and there's significant landslides and wipes out, I don't know, the villages that are underneath those factories, well, then you've caused a material impact to the environment. And that's never really been discussed before. So there's your difference. The US don't do that, and neither do India yet.
Okay. And so you see this concept of double materiality will spread wider?
It's not mandated unless you're in scope, depending on where you are on the scoping of CSR, Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive, CSRD. But I think businesses, it's making them think, because a lot of businesses with the reporting directives will have, depending on where they are on the phasing, there are different options at the minute. So you can have a kind of global reporting overlay, or you can have an entity-specific reporting to jurisdictions. You can then take exemptions as well if you wish and just report a group. But it's to what extent do those businesses truly adopt that concept and run double materiality assessments on all of their businesses.
The CFO Show is brought to you by Vena, the only complete planning platform natively integrated with Microsoft 365. With Vena, your finance and operations team can maximize your productivity and efficiency to deliver data and insights to your whole business faster. Vena lets your team use the Microsoft apps they already know and love, like Excel and PowerPoint, while giving your business the power of scale through a robust centralized database and AI capabilities. Learn more at venasolutions.com.
But it's to what extent do those businesses truly adopt that concept and run double materiality assessments on all of their businesses?
And so, you know, what you've described, you know, some great advances, which is amazing to hear, but I do think for businesses, it is quite confusing to try to navigate right now the current state of these things, especially because so many of our businesses are trying to be global. We don't typically just operate in our own boundaries. So how do you advise your clients to go about how to navigate this, and what standards or how do they start to take a phased approach to this? Because it can feel overwhelming.
It can. And increasingly, we are seeing organizations come and talk to us, either both in Europe and actually in the US as well, to say, well, we've spoken to some consultants, we've taken advice. And my strongest advice at that point is just don't go onto the internet and do a search. Just talk to the global specialist, please. Not necessarily us, but just talk to global specialists. Don't just talk to anybody on the internet, please. Because they won't tell you what the correct advice is. Our approach, what we say to the businesses, okay, firstly, take a monumental step back and evaluate exactly what you are doing. Forget regulation for a moment. What you are doing as an organization around environmental, social governance, and sustainability overlay. Just pause, analyze that, see where you are, first point. What are you legally, as a group or a global institution, or even just an organization, what are you actually legally in scope for? Some of them, it might just be local legislation. So if you're in California, there'll be the Californian rules where they've taken it a step further. Or you could just be, you might be listed, so SEC rules coming. Okay, where do you want your organization to be? So you know you've got to comply. And we often talk about, we have a scale of six. So naught is totally ignore and hope for the best. One is comply, do minimum. Two is comply and integrate. Three is comply, integrate, develop. All the way up to six, which is strategic class leading for your whole industry and your whole space. So you've adopted and enshrined it and actually using it as a tool to build and develop your business. So where do you want to be? And depending on where you want to be, will determine exactly where you want to take your strategy. So so whatever your compliance is, you have to satisfy. Let's say that's Corporate Sustainability Reporting Directive. There will be a set of requirements you will need to comply with within the rules. It might just be an entity in Italy or Spain or something, or it might be a large entity that you, a number of different jurisdictions that you can do an overlay on. So you agree all of that with your advisors once you've decided exactly where you are. Now, you can either choose to take that further or just satisfy that requirement. And that's my 1 to 6 scale. So if you want to be, let's say you want to be integrated into your organization and use it as a development tool for the business. Okay. So you take that regulation and you overlay it across your entire organization. So let's say you're a UK business and you've got numerous subsidiaries and none of them fall into scope in Europe, but they're in Europe as well. You don't have to report regulation because they're too small. But you're in scope for UK climate and financial disclosures, which is the main one for large companies, so £500 million turnovers. Okay, we'll use that regulatory disclosure and build your entire environmental social governance strategy in ensuring that that is integrated. So that has 8 disclosure requirements, 4 of which are pretty straightforward and mandatory. The other 4 are you can take an exemption with. And we do call out quite a lot of businesses who've tried to do the 8 and they just don't satisfy it. So we've said, okay, take the exemption and work towards the other 4. Build that across your whole business and organization. That does 3 things. One, you're regulatory aligned, which means when the auditors come knocking every year, you don't need to go, oh my goodness, we need to prepare all of our disclosures and we haven't really thought about it. You're already doing it. It's not a tick box exercise. It's enshrined in your strategy. And that's the thing we try and get companies to think differently. That's number one. Number two, the benefits of being regulatory aligned will mean your business will actually be in better shape, because the nature of the regulations are really specific around governance, around risk. And guess what? Your emissions and societal conduct is going to be your customers' emissions and societal conduct, isn't it? Because then your customer's customer's customer will somewhere rely on you. You're part of that chain. And this is where businesses have not recognized this, although it's what we're talking about, beginning to. So I always say your emissions and approach to how you treat your workforce is somebody else's scope 3 emissions and their disclosures around workforce, because your workforce is their workforce. So you use those regulations to frame your strategies. And actually, in the medium term, you're going to be more efficient financially, and you're going to be more efficient by not using consultants like us and auditors like us to help you, because you'll be doing it. So that's how we approach it. And so we use regulation as our enshrinement. And as regulation continues to evolve, don't just treat it as a punitive compliance exercise. Use it as a strategic benefit. Now, that's quite hard to swallow, particularly when businesses are looking at evaluating and saving costs. Some markets are really tough at the minute. So how do they then justify spending money on sustainability? Well, switch it. What's the value proposition? So part of our 1-6 scale is we say, well, okay, what is the value societally, economically, environmentally, and from a governance perspective? Because your customers will expect something from you. And if you're demonstrating best practice, you're going to have market value improvements. You're going to have market cap improvements. So not just market valuation in terms of where you sit, but market cap in terms of your overall value. Ratings agencies will look at you in a different perspective. Whether or not you're listed, ratings agencies still look at you because of investment perspective. So there is loads of opportunity with it, but it might seem frightening at the minute. So you break it down into manageable chunks. That's the way we do it. And I mean, that sound a bit basic or crass, but trust me, we've done it with some of the largest companies in the world. And I've also done it with some of quite small owner-managed businesses that have grown and grown and grown.
And so you've talked about specialists because it can feel like a lot, and sometimes trying to figure out what does this path look like to put together something that feels manageable, because you've got a business to run in the meantime while you're figuring out how to do this. There seem to be a lot of different even advisors out there. Like you said, there's lots of information available on the internet. What advice do you give to companies about how to go about that approach? And it sounds like it's maybe learning to ride the bike. You teach them and then off you go. So love your thoughts on that, as well as, is it a multi-year journey and plan that companies should think about to try to phase this in an approach that's easier to manage?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And it's one that the answer's evolved over the last 5 years. So take to use a colleague's, tsunami or power surge or power force or power storm of regulation in the last 5 years. You've had UK CFD, TCFD, SEC regulations, SECR, ESOS, CSRD, CSDDD, EU taxonomy, and now ISB, S1, S2. It's 10 forms of regulation, right? And not everybody would scope for all of that, but that's 10 regulations effectively coming through in about 4 or 5 years. So that's daunting. In the first instance, businesses should firstly talk to their auditors. Now, when an auditor is auditing their financial statements and accounts, we should technically cannot provide advice if they're an entity of special interest or another entity of special interest, an OP or a PI, as we call them. So we can provide assurance, but we cannot provide advisory services. We're conflicted. So you then get your advisors your auditors who are any good should then tell you who you should have a conversation with. And I emphasize this, there are some really good global businesses that just specialize in this stuff, and they're global and they've been doing it for years and they're very, very good. And then there's the audit firms who are just as good, if not better. The difference between an audit firm and an advisor is the audit firm has to be regulated. We have to sign off. So it means we have a slightly different and more challenging approach, I would say, because of the nature of our risk. So that's, I'd say you talk to people. And when we were slightly younger, the internet didn't necessarily exist, did it? So you'd go old school and pick up this thing called a telephone, which is quite unique. And you'd speak to your advisors, wouldn't send them a WhatsApp message or anything like that, and talk and get that initial diagnostic analysis. Let's see where you sit and then work through it. The regulatory side, and you can ask, and this is a bit of a blunt question, almost back to you. So if there is something in your world that you kind of like to do because it's the right thing to do, but you don't have to, and it's going to cost you money, are you going to do it? Probably not.
It makes it tough to make the cut.
Precisely. If you're made to do it because it's the law, and if you don't do it, you might get fined, are you probably going to have to do that?
Absolutely. You need to run a compliant business.
And that is where regulation has had a material effect to the way in which companies operate. And I say this with no sarcasm at all. People doing the right thing, you know, having solar panels on their roofs, ground source heat pumps. I won't get into electric cars because I can debate. We can have a whole session on that. And trying to do the right thing, is it materially going to affect the overall thematic climate emissions in the world? It'll have a small impact. What is truly going to have the impact is the way in which companies manage and deal with their approach to sustainability, which is where regulation falls into place. And that's why regulation is so relevant, because if they don't do it right, and the auditors are robust, and whether it's under European, the United States, UK, India, aspect, I mean, I think Hong Kong is beginning to do something. China's beginning to evolve now as well. I know Japan is certainly. Companies will lose market value. And unfortunately, there are two things that make the world go around: how much and who's doing it. And underpinned, as we say, by an approach to sustainability and ESG that is there for the medium term and the long term. And if you think you're going to crack it in 1 year, then bluntly, you're an idiot. You need to map it for 3 to 5 years. So when we talk to clients, whether it's advisory or whether we're doing assurance, we're looking at assurance metrics over 3 to 5 years.
If you enjoyed this episode and want to learn more, sign up for our free newsletter, where each week you'll get a roundup of exclusive resources designed to help you grow your leadership skills and drive strategic transformation across your business. Visit thecfoshowpodcast.com to sign up now. For The CFO Show, I'm Melissa Howitson. Until next time.